Hello, this is Neil Sheff.
And I'm Katie Holmes, and this is the Don't Do That, Do This podcast, brought to you by the British Chamber of Commerce, Dubai. We're sharing stories of success and growth from the Middle East for companies that are already here and those looking to come.
We're talking to Fazila Gopalani, who is the head of the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants, ACCA, in Eurasia and Middle East. Fazila is responsible for leading the operations in 11 countries and representing more than 20,000 members across the Middle East. She has contributed her expertise to several of the country's key government agendas, and she is behind several groundbreaking industry initiatives, including Women in Finance.
It's a great podcast and one to listen to if you're a business owner, either here already or looking to the region. Really looking forward to sharing it with you. Please, can you subscribe so that you're here? This is episode, we've got so many coming now.
So many.
We've got so many episodes, but if you go onto our YouTube, you can see them all shared. But we need you to subscribe. So if you can subscribe.
Yes, please.
You'll be the first to hear when new ones come up.
This podcast wouldn't have been possible without the following teams. Rightfully for Storytelling and Thought Leadership. Studio Red for the quality podcast studio and video production. And Sherbet Lemon for branding, social media design and editing.
Welcome to our Don't Do That, Do This podcast, Fazila. It's amazing having you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Making it all the way to Silicon Oasis. I know that was...
Yes, it's in the other part of town.
And your reward is, and the first question is around your favourite biscuit. So please tell us what your favourite biscuit is.
Chocolate hobnobs.
Brilliant. That's really handy because I have a packet here for you.
Thank you so much.
Is there a story behind it?
No, just when we were young, we'd walk into Safeways. Do you remember that in England? And our mother would let us loose and discovered hobnobs probably at the age of 7. And since then, yes, it's been my favourite biscuit. Although... I probably haven't bought a box of hobnobs in the last 3 years, so thank you.
There you go.
It's okay, temptation there for the weekend.
to dip or not to dip in tea?
To dip. Of course.
And get lost
when the
in there.
Milk chocolate just sort of melts and the biscuit goes super soft and then you have to have a teaspoon to like pull it out of the tea.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so should we
Whole
just
industry.
Stop the podcast?
Yeah.
All right, so really excited to have you here. And let's just, for the people listening or watching, just describe your role at the ACCA and, more importantly, what is the ACCA responsible for?
Fantastic. So ACCA is the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. We're a global body of professional accountants. We're a membership community. We have around 750,000 students, future members and members in across 181 countries. I am the head of Eurasia and Middle East, leading on a portfolio of 22 countries.
Wow.
Yes, very exciting. It's a full-time job. And so for the Middle East, we work across the 11 countries and we have around 20,000 students, members and affiliates. I think what's important to recognize is that as ACCA, we're supporting the development of the accounting profession globally. We believe that the cornerstone of any society is the accounting profession, and that we help economies, organizations, countries, and societies grow and thrive. And that's what our agenda and purpose is as ACCA.
Do you have to tailor the courses and qualifications by country? Like, is there a cultural element that you have to factor in for those qualifications?
So for our core qualification, which is to become a chartered certified accountant, that's all in English. And that is a long journey. It's like running a marathon. It's 13 exam papers to become a qualified accountant. On the other side, you've got this ACCA learning stream, which is short certificates to support finance and accounting professionals with upskilling themselves on current new topics. In that, we have actually got 3 certificates that we've translated in Arabic. Now, for a global organization with headquarters in the UK, his qualification has been in English, and we've been established since 1904. So that's 120 years ACCA has been going. We've now got 3 certificates in Arabic, and they're doing exceptionally well in the region because public sector all speak Arabic. Nothing is done in English. And so, yes, being careful about the culture, being considerate about the culture, we developed a UAE tax certificate, and we had to be very cautious there about mentioning things such as alcohol or the pictures that we put on the online course. And that's just part of the fun of working for a global organization, but also making it so locally relevant.
Yeah, localizing for this market is, I started learning that a year and a half ago and made a few mistakes. Weren't too bad, but a few people pointed a few mistakes out just in presentations using certain images, and went through that learning. So tell us about the journey to where you are today. You fell into accounting almost suddenly. Could you start there?
Yep. So I was a daughter of a accountant. So my father was born and raised in Malawi. He came to the UK in the 1960s to study his ACCA qualification. He gave us a fantastic life, had his own accounting practice. And typical sort of Indian family, one had to be an accountant, one had to be a lawyer, and one had to be a doctor. I became the accountant, my sister became the lawyer. Don't know what happened to my brother, okay? So I wasn't actually given a choice what I was going to study. I didn't know what I was going to study or what I wanted to do, but my father said he knew me well and to trust him. And I did an accounting and finance degree at University of Birmingham. I left university, thought I was going to enter the big bad world, get a job at the Big Four. And what happened was my father wanted me to join his accounting practice. So he had a small, medium accounting practice with about 350 clients. So I left university, started my professional qualification, ACCA, and joined his accounting practice. I worked with him specializing in tax. So was a right introvert, was sent to the filing cabinet room, didn't even have my own office, to do VAT returns all day long. And then I started specializing in personal income tax, corporate tax, and doing tax investigations with him. 3 years later, my father passed away suddenly from pancreatic cancer. I was 23 years old. I was the eldest. I had younger siblings, and I had to take over running the accounting practice. So I had a choice. Do I sell it? Do I close it down? Or do I take over and run the firm? And at 23, I decided that I wanted to give it a chance and continue my father's legacy. 7 years later, with a lot of struggle, you know, every day I had to put on my armor and go out there and fight to keep my clients, fight to recruit new clients, to keep my staff. Being a jack of all trades is hard work in running your own business, especially at such a young age. 7 years later, I then decided, well, it was my husband who decided that he wanted to come to the UAE, the land of opportunities, and I sold the accounting practice.
Oh, okay. And what was the process there then? Just from how quick did that happen? Did you have somebody lined up or?
No, so to value a business in the UK, especially an accounting firm, so I recruited a consultant who valued our financial statements, told us what we could expect from sale, and then went out to other small, medium practices in the Midlands area to ask if they wanted to buy another practice. It was all a very interesting process in how you sell an accounting practice. We had about four offers on the table with prices that we wanted. And then my father's brother was also a chartered accountant. So he also put an offer in, and in order to keep it in the family, I gave the firm to my father's brother.
Oh, that's really nice. And just before we go into your transition to Dubai, how does a 23-year-old who's now running from doing VAT statements and income tax to running an organization with 350 clients, what do you do? Where do you get the skills to be able to do that?
So I had to become a leader at a very young age. Number one, I was never shy of asking for help. I don't know everything. I still don't know everything. Listening, learning, and asking subject matter experts for their support is ever so important in being able to run your own business successfully. So I would reach out to a tax specialist, an auditor, somebody who was a specialist in tax investigations to come and support me with running my practice until I learned how to do that job. And then I was there by myself doing it. Second was, you're only as good as the team and the people that you've got around you. I had a fantastic team of people that my father had groomed and trained. Mm-hmm. And it was about continuing that practice with them on board with me. So it was being a leader with them, and the importance of teamwork, working with others and collaborating, but also listening. I was 23 years old. I'd only worked in the practice for 3 years. They'd been in the practice for 20, 25 years. And now I'm sitting filling humongous shoes. So I always respected what my team said to me and listened. And I think third was that I had to have a growth mindset. It was about learning, adapting and evolving and embracing change. And that was a key skill that I've taken away from running the accounting practice.
Was there someone on your right-hand side in particular? Is there someone that stands out to you or you remember when you think about having that support?
Yeah, I had another one of my father's brothers. My uncle was working with me in the accounting practice and he was my right hand at teaching me everything, which I'm very, very grateful for.
Yeah, I can imagine. So then, and then 7 years later, you've sold the business.
Yeah.
How did that feel? Did you buy?
It was emotional. It was my father's whole life. And then it was my life. I had two kids, Amara and Usman, during the time of running the practice. I never had maternity leave for 6 months. I literally had maternity leave for 40 days. And even during those 40 days when I was at home, I was dictating letters, going through, responding to tax investigations and letters that had come from authorities. So I'd never had a break. It was emotional, letting go, but also exciting at what the future held for us in the UAE. I was excited about having a clean break. Losing my father was very difficult. I was very close to him. And coming to Dubai felt like I was going to start again with my family. And I think that was key and something I was looking forward to.
And did you have a base here when you got here? Or was it literally starting from scratch, finding your feet?
Starting from scratch,
yeah.
Finding my feet. And we all know, we've all been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. It's not easy to restart your whole life in a new country.
Especially the time you came, right? 2008.
Financial crisis.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I came a couple of months before it and then
really?
The financial crisis happened and it was like, what have we done?
Yeah.
But you've got to ride the storm, right? It's like surfers riding the wave. We had to ride that wave out. Many people did leave and go back home during that time, remember?
They had to. I mean, there was no way of staying.
I'd come out and thought, I'm never going to work again. I've sold an accounting practice. I'm just going to...
That was actually one of my questions.
My husband was working and he had his own business. So I thought, there's no need for me to work.
Okay, so you came here with the idea of sitting on a beach.
Exactly.
It's a nice idea.
That was my looking plan up, as well.
How did that work out for you?
No.
Didn't last long, did it?
No, not really.
Found it was expensive to live in Dubai.
Exactly.
My youngest was 9 months when I came out here, and it was really difficult being a full-time mom versus I'd always worked. So I was looking for part-time work, it to work around the children. Now that's not easy in the UAE. It wasn't easy back in 2008.
There's a huge opportunity. I've been talking a lot about it at the British Chamber of Commerce Dubai about the talent that's out there, particularly women looking to return to work, and the opportunity for founders and SMEs to grasp that talent, not on a 9-to-5 basis, but actually getting expert help. So how did you go about it? What were your next steps in looking to find a role?
So I was learning Arabic because I wanted to learn conversational Arabic. So I was walking to the World Trade Center for a class, had parked up after dropping the kids to school. And I saw a person who had a Kaplan tax ACCA textbook. And I thought, is there ACCA here in Dubai? So I asked the student, are you studying ACCA? And she was like, yes. And I was like, where? And it was in the World Trade Center where the classes were being held. And I basically got in touch with them and said, do you have any vacancies? I'm a tax specialist and I can teach tax. And that's how I started. Rest is history. And that's how I got into lecturing. So I started training a couple of evenings a week on ACCA, on tax paper and corporate reporting. Then got approached by University of Leicester to fly to Beirut to deliver on an MBA on the finance and accounting module. And that was my first time I'd gone out of the UAE to Beirut. Then I got approached by University of Strathclyde, the Scottish University, to lecture on their MBA. And then I got into corporate training and I was literally doing 5-day courses in a hotel to staff from across the region who came to learn about finance and non-finance professionals.
I think there's a really important message in there, and it's for anybody listening, make sure you do branded notebooks.
Yeah.
It's incredible that you happen to see that. And that's then the path. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you would have found it perhaps another way, but that's a great story.
Oh, I mean, we should really do that. I'm going to share that with my team.
Yeah.
We should be doing branded notebooks.
Branded t-shirts, branded...
Yeah, I think that's great.
Make it easy for everybody.
Yeah, we should. Something you just said there with learning conversational Arabic. I've literally been thinking about this because there's... within my office/community, there's a company that does that. And I'm wondering whether it's useful.
I believe that if you want to work across the Middle East, not just in the UAE, then having conversational Arabic would really help you stand out from the crowd.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to work with government sectors in Saudi, or you're going to Egypt,
yeah,
or Oman. It's a difficult language, but at the end of the day, you're learning a language that is going to help you if you want to stay here for the long term.
Yeah, if you're in this region. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because my parents and my family say you can't even speak your own mother tongue, Gujarati. So
yeah.
Anyway,
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. My kids don't even speak any of our mother tongues. Yeah, they 100% speak English. So we've just lost our whole...
Our roots.
Roots, exactly.
Conversational Arabic is then. So as you know, above anyone else, last year, I think it was June 2023, the 9% corporation tax came in. Pause for effect. How do you feel about that?
I know many people are not happy about it, but what people have to understand is that the UAE joined forces with 137 other nations in embracing the OECD's two-pillar approach to reshaping international tax framework. We had to get onto international best practices to be seen as a player, same as Singapore and New York and other countries. So the UAE had to adopt it in order to make this a level playing field. We have so many multinationals based here, headquartered here, and therefore it had to happen. It was just, when was it going to happen? And that conversation about joining the 137 other nations happened in October 2021. And if we look, it still took a couple of years until last year, June, when it was actually fully introduced.
And what are the main differences between, so slightly broader now, between the UK and the UAE when it comes to accounting practices? Like, from my experience, I feel like it's not something I think about in the UK. I go, I need to find a good accountant, get a referral. Okay, you're going to help me with accounting, right? And then it's this thing that's left my mind. I go, yeah, I'm comfortable. Whereas in this region, even though I have an accountant, there's this part of me, and I actually, it happens in the office, they say, have you done corporation tax? Make sure you do your VAT. Make sure, and my answer is the same, which would be in the UK, is, but I've got an accountant who should be doing it. But they still say, yeah, but just make sure they do it, because they might not be doing it. And I go, this seems normal here. So tell us about your experience, and what are the key differences in accounting?
So first of all, what I will say is, since the introduction of VAT, we have seen an influx of small, medium practices opening up here in the UAE. People from different countries and different nationalities coming in and opening firms. The main difference between the UK and the UAE is that there's more compliance and regulatory framework. So if you're a limited company in the UK, you have to have an accountant because you have to submit your accounts to Companies House. If you're self-employed, you have to have an accountant because you need your personal tax return done. And that needs to be submitted before the 31st of January every year. Otherwise, you'll get a fine. Here, it's ever so new. VAT is also new. It's only been a couple of years. And corporate tax is completely brand new. And there are fines. There are strict fines for not having met the deadlines or, you know, failure to submit. And because it's such a new landscape right now for small and medium practices, they're all having to hire staff to get them on board. Do you know the amount of jobs that are opened right now across the region for tax specialists? There are so many jobs available for tax specialists. The thing is, we're not able to find enough people who have tax knowledge here. So we're having to recruit, organizations are having to recruit from abroad, whether that's the UK, whether that's Australia, whether that's Egypt, because the tax landscape is very similar. So there is a big need to upskill. If you're a chartered accountant, it doesn't mean that you are knowledgeable and have the skill set for UAE tax. Yes, the frameworks are the same, but you need to become adept with the tax knowledge. And therefore, at ACCA, what we have done is actually we've developed a UAE tax and regulation certificate that is specific for upskilling any finance and accounting professionals in that area.
How long does that take for someone who's already qualified in ACCA, the UK, comes over here? How long would that course take?
It's a 20-hour online course.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, and then they have to sit an exam pass it.
Okay, thank you. So, cash flow.
Oh, yes.
Favorite topic?
Yep, love it.
Let's do it. So, cash flow is a real challenge here. We've just signed a client and we're on 60-day payment terms. It's the first time I'm on 60-day payment terms with a client. And we went back and forth. There was no back and forth. It was almost going back and then nothing. And it was our choice whether to work with them or not. And because of the name, we decided to go with it. But 60-day payment terms plus, well, and that's from the moment we deliver the work. So let's say 30 days plus another 60 days. We're out of pocket for 90 days, right? Which means we have to make sure we collect from other clients who are on shorter payment terms. Actually, in the UK, we've got a number of clients on, we invoice you the moment we start working with you and we have a 7-day payment term from the moment we invoice you. So that's more or less upfront. So now I'm coming across this real thing, this real cash flow element, and I've heard of it in the UAE. A number of times. Make sure you own your cash and manage your cash. So give us your description of that issue and how a small business or a medium business can manage their cash flow in this region when you've got these 60 days almost normal, right?
Well, first of all, I would say that you need to say alhamdulillah, because 60 days is actually good, okay? Yes. Number two, turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, cash is reality. And as we've always heard, cash is king. Being a small business, you need to manage your cash flow. Your liquidity is ever so important. And there's a formula that we accountants use called cash conversion cycle. Companies and businesses do not go bankrupt or do not need to close down because they were not profitable. They close down because of cash flow problems. And so the most important thing is here in this part of the world is that you need to retain a certain amount of money in the business account and not go under it. And that is the only way you're going to manage your cash flow. You cannot be living month to month, deal to deal, client to client, inflow, outflow. It won't work that way. 60 days could turn into 70 days, could go to 120 days. You don't want to be losing your business just because you didn't manage your cash flow. And therefore, looking at how much you've got to collect and how much you've got to give out, managing your finances, managing and following up with customers when they haven't paid you, asking suppliers for a couple more days, asking for an extension is so, so important.
Do you think there's a resilience for business owners anywhere, really? But let's look at the UAE since the pandemic, because I think that took everybody by surprise. If you didn't have the cash flow, then you couldn't pay your staff. We knew that people were using their credit cards, personal credit cards, to meet the bills, which is obviously why there was an exodus. It wasn't good. It wasn't a great time because you had no government support either. So do you think there is a new resilience in business owners and a responsibility on the accountancy sector to help those business owners mitigate risks that are unforeseen?
Yes, for sure. The pandemic taught us a lot. And for businesses that are not here today, that has taught other businesses the importance of cash flow management. And yes, it should be a finance person within your business or your accountant that should be supporting you on that. Even back in the UK when I was running my accounting practice, I used to prepare management accounts with cash flow forecasts for my largest clients. Okay, back in those days, it was on Excel. But we used to manage the cash inflow and the cash outflow, knowing, are there months where we're going to have to ask the bank for a short-term overdraft? Are there months and demonstrating to the bank that we'll be able to repay this within 2 months because of these payments coming in? Week to week, month to month, cash flow management is ever so important for the survival of your business in the current economic climate that we're living in, whether that's the UAE or anywhere in the world.
Let's take an example for a small business. Let's just say it's a service-based business. Have you got a particular formula that we can apply to manage our cash flow?
So what I would say is you should have a total or running list of everything that is owed to you and everything that you then owe. And ensure that next to that, you've got your number of days that you're expecting this in. And you need to be strict on the number of days. But if it's a key client and you don't have a choice of when you're going to expect that payment in. So it's about managing the other smaller clients that you may have to make sure that they pay you on time.
That's really unfair on the supply chain, yeah. Really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And
the smaller companies making up for the larger companies.
That's the way the world is, isn't it? And it's not fair.
So you've spoken about accountancy being the cornerstone of business. What is there a threat with AI?
Oh, I love this topic. I was actually just at a session yesterday about AI and the future of learning and assessment, which was ever so interesting. And I do a lot of panels where I moderate panels to ask about the threat of AI. Now, my personal opinion is AI is here to support us and help us, and it's going to get rid of a level of jobs within the accounting profession that are mundane, that are task orientated, that this Gen Z wouldn't have done. This Gen Z are very purpose-driven, values-based driven. They've got a different type of work ethic to what we've done. They're not going to go and tick the books and do all the credit and debits, right? So that level of jobs will disappear. But what will happen is AI cannot replace human judgment. It cannot think strategically and make decisions. And that's where our skill set as accounting and finance professionals, we're going to have to up our game. And we're going to have to look at data, look at the numbers, and make informed decisions to help organizations thrive, make more profit, make decisions for them. So I think it's a really interesting time in this area of technological revolution that we're going through, especially for the accounting profession. Everyone says, oh, you know, technology is going to take over our jobs. Has it in the past? The ATM machine came and we didn't need that many tellers, did we? But the ATM machine created so many more jobs. You know, people who had to put the ATM machine together, the security guards who go collect. So jobs do come out of new technology coming out. It's just they're different jobs that we haven't seen previously. So I think it's an exciting time ahead of us.
And I agree. We've seen it even at the Chamber where we've automated all of our accountancy now, and it's elevated the people involved, that they now have the headroom to be more strategic, look at the governance of it more as well. So yeah, I'm a big believer of AI for good.
Do you know, in the UK, they have drones that do stock takes. think about an auditor's life at 31st of December, we used to have to go into warehouses and check how many TVs and hi-fis they had.
That's crazy.
Right? So drones do things like that. Now, think about in the UK, they've got a robot that looks at a person doing a tax return and will probably copy that individual or watch them for about 2-3 days, and then they're doing a tax return within a couple of hours.
Do they do a lie detector test as well?
Probably.
Strapped up to a heart monitor while you're filling in all the information.
You never know what's going to happen,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Keep your copybooks nice and clean. Well, thank you so much. That was a great whistle-stop tour around ACCA. And also thank you for sharing your personal story as well. Thanks also for being a member of the Chamber and a guest on this podcast.
Thank you, Katie. And thank you, Neil, for the opportunity. It was great.
Yeah, great having you.
Thank you.